It's showtime.
Welcome into the SEC pub.
What's up, everybody? I'm your host, Dale. Welcome into the SEC pub. We're going to put down three games from this week. And to help me do that, I got my cousin Kellen, and I also got Evis with me. Fellas, how y'all doing?
What's up, man? How you doing, Dale?
All good, all good. I am expecting to be joined by Coach Lee later. Hopefully he can make it in and give us another person to talk to. So, yeah, man, let's get into this week four. But, yo, let's talk real quick about week three. Did y'all stay up and watch that Colorado game in overtime?
Absolutely, I did.
Yeah, man. I was asleep.
Guys, I didn't miss one snap. I got a whole lot. I kind of like that schedule. It gave me a chance to get all of my Saturday stuff done during the day. I was done washing. I had been to the gym.
Yeah.
But, man, Coach Prime is a big ticket for me. And so I watched every single snap, and I was impressed with it. And I think they broke some kind of record with the views there. Absolutely stayed up for it.
And to say that was a really, really late game. I was up like 1 o'clock in the morning texting people like, yo, wake up, watch this game.
Yeah. I was asleep. I was sleeping on the sofa, woke up. I looked at it, it was 20-20, so I missed the 98-yard
round.
But I did watch overtime.
Okay, you caught the overtime. That's good.
I was a little confused with the overtime, but you know, with the possessions going back and forth, I thought you flip flop. But
with
Colorado, Colorado State, I guess they changed the rules.
Yeah.
That was the one. What do you guys think about the game? Like, it was a lot of undertones to the game, and I think Shador should secure his spot as a legitimate Heisman Trophy candidate in the game. He was surgical on that 98-yard drive.
Yeah.
He makes very sound decisions. He rarely misses a throw. In fact, I haven't saw Shador miss a throw where you feel like, you know, an open guy should be hit. He puts it on their hands every single time. Makes good decisions out there. And he's not a running quarterback, man. He's a pocket passer.
Yeah.
And then you combine that with the idea of the kid who hit Travis Hunter 3 yards after the ball had touched the ground.
Bro, that's crazy, huh? Right.
He was aiming
it
for
feels
that
like more should have been done to him than what happened, you know, as a punishment for that play, doesn't it?
So did the Pac-12 not do anything?
You know, I don't think anything was done. In fact, I felt like he became the victim over the course of the week.
Right.
Right.
But he's no victim, guys. He's no victim. And I didn't like it because I felt like that was you guys are familiar with being out of Louisiana with this bounty gates, right?
Oh, yeah.
We don't have to revisit that too much.
I remember that.
It just kind of gave me.
Yeah.
That was the feeling that I had based on the things that were kind of said in, you know, leading up to the game. And that's
right.
They were a talented football bunch, and they played really hard. I was proud of the kids for how they played, how hard they played. But I think I think a message was given to them in their locker rooms and throughout the course of the week.
I think you got a good point, because there was a lot of talking going on before the game. There was even like a little skirmish and stuff between the teams before the game and everything like that. What happened to Hunter was blatant, and like I thought – especially seeing the results of the hit, like there should have been more done for sure.
That's the feeling that I had there.
Yeah.
I just felt like, you know, the 15-yard penalty, or I think it ended up being maybe a 30-yard penalty because it was a pass interference, which was 15 yards. And I think they charged him with a dead ball foul, you know, hit as well. And they were charged there. And you think about that hit. The kid who got the interception called against him, who chased Shiloh into the end zone, he tackled him in the end zone.
You're right.
So, It just makes me feel like that was a message that was given from the coaching staff versus because too many of these acts happen on the field of play.
But like, even look at this. You're suspending kids for half or game for targeting, right?
Right.
Like that's their intent right there. Like, boom.
Yeah. And targeting actually happens between the whistle, right?
Right.
That's something that happens between the whistle.
Exactly.
You know, as a former college football linebacker, I know how hard it is to let up on someone when you're approaching the sidelines and you know, when you're in traffic or if a whistle blows, if a guy's standing, you know, sometimes a player doesn't go to the ground, but the whistle hadn't blown yet, but the ref sees fit that the kid is not, you know, he's down basically standing up if enough kids have him.
Right.
Guys, I won't get into it too much because no other ones that come down. I don't have insider knowledge.
Yeah.
But I am a fan of football, and I got 30 some odd years of football experience, either playing, coaching, watching. And so, yeah, it was something in the locker room said to those guys.
Oh, yeah. It definitely was. I mean, especially the hit. I mean, he knew exactly where he was aiming for. And once he started up, the ball was overdrawn, and he still went on for the kill shot.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was definitely unnecessary. So
unnecessary. But yeah, they should have did more than that 15-yard penalty. They knew, even the referees knew about the everything lead up until the game.
Right.
So they should have had a talk with the both coach and team before the game even started.
To that's a great point.
If they happen.
Yep.
This is
calm everything down.
That's a great point. That is a great point. Because it was just so much talk that was out there. The coach had made, you know, he had made his assessment about Deion and being respectful and setting the standard for what respect looks like and that sort of thing. And so I think you're exactly right. There should have been some conversations had prior to the game. And that's normal, actually, for referees to gather the captains and gather the coaches in the center of the field before the game starts. Sometimes during the game or after halftime, if they feel like things are getting out of control, that's a time where you'll see that happen as well. And I don't want to say the referees did a bad job of reffing the game, but it was things that was out there on the field that had nothing to do with football.
Yeah, I'm with you for sure, man. So let's get into these games for week four. And the first one we're going to start off with is Colorado. At Oregon, and Oregon is a 21-point favorite. The total for this game is 70 points. So, again, we got Colorado coming off of a thrilling overtime victory over Colorado State. But, you know, of course, they're going to be missing their two-way star, Travis Hunter. He's going to be out. He's probably going to be out a few weeks. And they're saying it's a lacerated liver on that late hit. So, with this game, we're going to see if Shedeur Sanders can keep the offense on track even without Travis Hunter. So what are your thoughts, quick thoughts, about first thoughts about this this game here, right?
Okay, man, real quickly, man, I started early, and I'm going to continue doing it, man.
Yeah.
I drank that prime juice, man, that prime time juice early on. And you know, when you consider Oregon putting up a lot of points and you know, being a 21-point favorite, they don't just score a lot of points. They get a lot of points scored against them as well. And that's what that league and that conference looked like and has looked like traditionally.
Yeah.
21 points won't be the spread. They may be Colorado. I'm not counting Colorado out by any means in this game. But I think this game looks like a one-score game to me.
Okay.
I think, you know, and that's – a star was born in that game, if you guys didn't get an opportunity to watch, in that tight end there. I think he's very reliable for Shedeur to go to in situations, in third down situations. And Deion definitely had a week to clean up these crossing routes that Colorado State used against Colorado to beat them, to stay competitive into that game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I just feel like if you man coverage doesn't work against crossers because you're just behind a guy, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter how good you are as a defensive back. We're going to see what kind of adjustments Prime makes and see if they go into some pass-off zones where they can pass those guys across the field versus chasing guys across the field, have someone waiting instead of someone chasing. And so you get those things cleaned up, they have a chance there at Oregon. I am gonna say Oregon has a nod to win just because they're at Oregon. But okay. I'm definitely tuning in for this game, and it's not going to be a 21-point game by any means, no.
All right. Well, Kellen, what you think? I mean, Oregon hadn't really been tested yet. I'm just looking at their previous games.
Texas Tech, right?
Yeah, okay,
Texas
yeah.
Texas Tech. Okay. This game will be won by the Colorado offensive line against Oregon defensive line. Because I watched the graphic. They had Shedeur Sanders has been hit 55 times, while Bo Nix only been hit 4 times. So if Colorado defensive line can get pressure on Bo Nix, they can have him looking like when Oregon played Georgia, when Bo Nix couldn't do anything. If they can rattle Bo Nix, they can keep this game close. Oregon averaged 54 points per game.
Yeah.
So that I think that's why the total is so high. I think Colorado probably 30 some points per game. I don't know for sure, but I got that. I'm taking Colorado plus the points. If they lose, it won't be plus 17. It will be I think between 7 and 10.
I love your take. I love your take on that. And I want to ask you a question because do you think that Prime is gonna bring more pressure with his linebackers or try to sneak safeties into the box to put pressure on Bo Nix because of that, because he does have a big arm down the field. They do have athletes down the field, and the cornerbacks will have to hold up on the backside if they bring pressure. Do you think because Bo Nix struggles against pressure, you think Colorado will bring more pressure this week?
I think they will try it in the first quarter, see how it works. If they give up a couple long passes, then they probably will check out of it to try to take that away and have the defense probably play more zone to cut down on the short passing and maybe the crossing. Because the Oregon might look at if Colorado State can do it, and if they bring the safety up, we go over top. If they safety back, we gonna cross them. Yeah, so I think they probably run more messes and drags and try to get the defense, the linebacker, try to exploit their weaknesses.
I love your take. I love your take on that.
Yeah, so that was it. But I wish I could watch it, but I won't be able to watch it.
Oh, man, you'll miss that game. Okay.
I'm going to be in Baton Rouge.
Oh, okay. You going to the LSU game. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Hey, before we move on from that, Dale, I just want to make a point that another factor that we got to consider is who is the cornerback that's Travis Hunter's replacement?
And yeah.
Is Oregon gonna put a target on him and say, hey, let's find out right now if this kid is ready to play?
Yeah.
Right.
That's something that football coaches and offensive coordinators are popular for.
Absolutely.
And I think either a star's gonna be born or somebody's gonna be exposed because Oregon is gonna throw the football at that kid, man. Whoever that kid is, I don't know who he is. Obviously, he played okay, after Travis Hunter's injury last week and Colorado was able to hold on. But you build confidence by getting the opportunity to play. So I'm excited for that game. I'm watching, guys. I got a team of people. We got a date to watch that game, man.
Love it. I love it, man. Coach, we talking Colorado yet again. On the SEC pub. How you doing, man?
Good, man.
All good. So Colorado is going to Oregon here, and Oregon is a 21-point favorite here. Coach, what's your thoughts on that one?
It's going to be a tough game, man. Hit it up to, what's that? Eugene, Oregon, I think is where they play at.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got their work cut out for them. Losing Travis Hunter is definitely going to hurt. Offense, I think, is going to be okay. You know, Shadur was looking really good. Like I say, he went into Brady mode the other night. So he seems cool, calm, collected in the pocket. Had some receivers step up, tight end stepped up. But the defensive side, especially in the middle of it, you know, the linebacker level, they look a little bit shaky. So they got some things to clean up. But I expect a great game.
Yeah.
Me too. Mm-hmm.
So we said that hit was dirty on Travis Hunter. What's your thoughts about that? And do you know if there were any more repercussions that I just didn't know about?
It definitely was a dirty hit. It's football. I'm a little old school in that aspect. You know, okay. If you don't play it like that, it's some retribution on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to make it obvious, but we're going to have to get our leg back. But, you know, some of the other stuff that escalated from that, you know, the threatening the family and doxing them and stuff like that, all that's not necessary. It's football at the end of the day.
Okay. All right, let's move to our next game here. We got Ohio State going down to Notre Dame. The Ohio State is a 3-point favorite. The total for this game is 55.5. It's another battle of two unbeaten teams. ESPN is going to be there with the College Game Day program. Notre Dame, third in passing yards allowed per game at 128 yards. Ohio State's averaging 310 yards passing per game. So can Notre Dame's defense slow down guys like Marvin Harrison Jr.? And can the senior quarterback, Sam Hartman, leading the charge for Notre Dame, can he continue his good play? He's like fifth in the nation in passing, and he's got like 13 touchdowns so far. So Notre Dame has been impressive. But this is a big game here. Kellen, what you thinking here about this one?
I'm going with Notre Dame on this one. I'll look at the graph again. Notre Dame is 0-5 against Ohio State in Notre Dame.
Ooh.
So I watched the Ohio State versus Indiana. I was impressed with the offense, with Ohio State offense. I watched a little bit of the Western Kentucky game when it was close. You know, Western Kentucky just got they was up good, but once they gave up that score, it kind of like the momentum went flat, and then Ohio State just exploited them and went off for 42 points in the first half. The offense haven't looked good to me at all. In Notre Dame, that running game, man, that running game was good. Plus the quarterback from Wake Forest,
right?
He can sling it. So I'm looking, and then they have Notre Dame with the crowd.
Yeah.
Game day, and it's going to be at night. and they actually, to me, if Notre Dame cornerbacks can keep Marvin Harris Jr. At least in check for a little bit and get a 14-point, 21-point, 17-point advantage, it'll be hard for Ohio State to come back, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
So if you're betting me, I'm taking. I believe Ohio State the favorite, so I'm taking Notre Dame plus the three.
Plus the three. I got you. Evans, what you thinking?
Man, it's a couple of things with this game, man. I really like that Notre Dame coach. I like what he's trying to do with that at the team at Notre Dame, and again that Wake Forest quarterback who came over to Notre Dame is actually playing really well. But ultimately, for me, Ohio State, they're doing themselves an injustice if Marvin Harrison Jr. isn't targeted 10 to 12 times in the game. And if Marvin Harrison Jr. gets 10 to 12 targets, I like Ohio State, man. He's a pro, man. He's a professional athlete that plays college football. And he's special to watch with the ball in his hands and the things he can do to get the ball out of the air, man. So I'm sold, man. I'm also drinking that Marvin Harrison Jr. juice, man. So,
you think he's the top wideout coming out into the draft?
He's the top wideout in this class, and he was the top wideout last year as well.
Wow.
I agree with that.
All right. Coach, what's your thoughts here?
First, I'm going to come right off the bat. I think Notre Dame is going to cover. I like the defensive side of the ball. You know, all the targets going to Marvin Harrison, while we just got done talking about him, he is a Superman of college football, you know, from a receiving standpoint this year. I think they're going to be able to just isolate him over there. You know, he's going to get his. It's going to go back to like they did with Jordan and the Bulls. He's going to get his regardless. Don't let anybody else go off on you. And I think Notre Dame does that and keeps everything in front of him.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a defensive-minded head coach. So he should. Yeah. He should have something cooked up.
I mean, I'm rooting for the Notre Dame head coach, because that first year I felt so bad when he lost to Marshall, when he lost to other team when they were calling for him to get fired after two games.
Yeah,
I'm like, man, I felt so bad for him. So now, you know, if he could get this win versus a number six and jump up in the rankings, you know, he'll have a positive thing going for him this year, and don't lose to a big game and try to get that reputation of him losing big games like Brian Kelly had at Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah. You right about that, man. You right about that.
Man.
All right, we're going to wrap it up with one more game. The big one in my house, okay? This is LSU versus Arkansas. Evis, give us something that's going on with Arkansas right now. Is the running back situation, give us some news on Rocket Sanders, please.
I think Rocket Sanders is going to be out, guys, again for LSU. And it seems like Arkansas is trying to do things to get a feel to see where they're going to go to lean on one running back in order to bring the other running backs in as a counter. But who's going to be your bell cow with Rocket Sanders being out? For me, just looking back over the statistics from the BYU game, we still haven't seen a dose of what we know that KJ Jefferson is capable of. Okay. And so I'm looking forward to seeing if KJ Jefferson, in order for Arkansas to have a chance to compete against LSU this weekend, I do want to throw out both teams' records, because this is a rivalry game by all measures. Yep. And so I'm not going to look at records for this game. It's just a matter of respect. Both kids, actually, both teams, they know what this game means. And I think in the last couple of years with the opening of the portal, we've seen kids interchange between Arkansas and LSU. And they, you know, so for me, the key for Arkansas this week is going to be, can KJ Jefferson rush for 85 yards against LSU this week? And I think that's what's going to be the offset to determine the game for Arkansas offensively. With the running back position, you know, they're still working. We know what Sam Pittman is as an offensive line coach. And so you expect to see Arkansas begin to mesh. And sometimes guys play up to the teams that they're playing against.
Oh, that's true.
I'm looking forward to that game as well. I'm excited about Arkansas LSU. I'm always excited about Arkansas LSU.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, just living here in Arkansas, one thing I know, this game is the Super Bowl every year, right? For sure. But look, both teams are 2-1. LSU is going to be without Greg Brooks, their safety. He ended up having emergency surgery to remove like a brain tumor. So definitely keep him in your prayers, man. Arkansas, they opened up the season with a pair of blowout wins before losing to BYU last week by a touchdown. LSU, on the other hand, they're riding a two-game winning streak, following up a 41-14 victory over Mississippi State in week three. I thought it was a shocker just being able to beat Mississippi State that handily, but LSU end up pulling this out, man. So, Kellen, what did you see last game with LSU?
Man, they came and the offense was clicking. Jaden Daniel was on fire.
Yeah. I mean,
he went 11 for 11, 12 for 12. And him and Malik Neighbor finally got the chemistry that they were lacking the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So then blowing out Mississippi State, it was good to see, because by halftime you can relax, you know, you're gonna win. But in by our history, we always beat Mississippi State.
True.
Like, it was years ago, and I told someone, I said, if Mississippi State 12-0 and LSU 0-12, LSU is going to beat about 35. for some reason, LSU can have their number. It's always that one team. I don't know why. Yeah. It's always that one team. you want to talk about Arkansas? Arkansas had that Kent State win was kind of a struggle for them.
Okay.
Yeah, if they beat West Carolina, they struggle with Kent State. I'm kind of torn with this game because LSU can come out hot with chip on the shoulder for Greg Brooks. You know, he transferred from Arkansas.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had a surgery, so they could have that on their mind and come out blazing fire and have the game over and done with. Or it can go in its traditional route and it's always close. I remember that Darren McFadden game. It was,
You ain't lying.
Every time we play Arkansas, I think about that Darren McFadden. He ran on the sideline up the field. I think, come on, that game had me. Oh my gosh! But I think that 17.5 is too high. I think if LSU win, it will probably be between 3 and 7. It's gonna be real close. I know Rock it out, but it just LSU Arkansas. It just always close. Always, yeah, I can't.
That's what it means. It's just LSU Arkansas. It doesn't matter. It's not LSU Arkansas.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think I ever seen a blowout in the series. I maybe had to Google it, but I don't think I ever seen a blowout in
this. Yeah, it's rare when it happens, but you know.
Right.
So it's a rivalry matchup here, Coach. What you think?
I see. Well, first off, I think they're going to cover 17.5. That's a lot, especially with the rivalry going on. I think it's going to come down to both of the quarterbacks and their play. You know, Arkansas against LSU stout secondary and being able to get pressure, you know, from the front, which I think all can be accomplished. You know, I was looking at is it Jaden Daniels as a quarterback?
LSU.
Yeah.
He's leading rusher last year. Mm-hmm. He's on. Leading rusher again this year.
That's right.
So it all is going to run through him. So Arkansas are going to be able to contain that? Probably not, but we shall see. And as far as the secondary part of it, you know, they had a little bit of start off a little slow at the beginning of the year, you know, with Florida State, but they've seemed to be, you know, rounding it out and coming back to their own. That front is giving them a lot of pressure. A good pressure can always help a ailing secondary. And I think they're going to be able to do that. So I can actually see LSU winning this game, maybe 33-14,
33-17,
around that area.
Okay.
Hey, I want to add one thing before you kind of conclude with this Arkansas LSU. In special teams is actually going to be a factor in this game this week.
Okay. But,
Arkansas is getting confident, and they have a kick returner that's their local kid from Fayetteville. And I think he returned a punt for a touchdown against BYU. Mm-hmm. And so the kid, he's building confidence, and they're believing in him. But we have had some shaky punting there at Arkansas, too. So field position is always going to be important. And when you start talking about football, it's easy to overlook the importance of special teams. But special teams really can give the momentum a swing, you know, momentum swing into a game that really affects the score and the outcome of the game. And if you're Arkansas or LSU, because of the rivalry and how close this game is played year in and year out, if you're looking for an opportunity to gain an advantage, you want to try to do it in special teams, I think. And so I think that can be a factor this weekend as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One thing I want to ask about Arkansas, KJ Jefferson took, I want to say, 4 sacks last week. Now, Pittman is an offensive line guru. So what's been going on with the line? Is it helped?
I don't know if it's helped. They've had some problems in run blocking.
Okay.
And basically what happens, I think, it's easier to sack a quarterback if a team isn't having any kind of success running the football, because you almost get an opportunity defensively to eliminate the idea that they have options to run. You're not concerned about it. And so as a defensive play caller, you call plays that bring pressure. You run tight end and tackle, plays and games against the offensive line. But Arkansas, in order for KJ to stay upright, it's going to be necessary for Arkansas to enjoy some success running the football. And I think that's something that kind of eliminates the idea to get pressure, because when you run, you have to think about run. Yeah. You see quarterbacks take a lot of sacks because the defense isn't concerned about them running the ball. We just out here trying. We having a race to get to the quarterback. And so the only way to negate that is to enjoy some success running the ball then.
Yeah, I'm with you. Well, this is the battle of two of the best quarterbacks in the SEC between Daniels and Rice. So, I think it's gonna be a pretty good game. I think it's gonna be close. Jefferson. I meant. I think it's gonna be a pretty close game throughout the records. That's the way it usually goes. So. Fellas, I appreciate you guys joining us. And that's going to wrap things up here on the SEC Pub, man.
All right. Thanks for having us, man. I'm looking forward to this weekend.
All right. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Remember to follow us on social media at BSN Beer Media. Also, smash the like button on YouTube and share with friends. I'm a good American.